Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
I don't think when I was experiencing that stigma that it was malicious. I think it was because they just didn't understand it. I don't think it was as talked about then as it is now.
Like, the world was far from perfect before coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I have a real fear that the reality of that striking for a lot of people will be quite hard to deal with, probably for myself included.
Whatever anyone says, that is your thing. And I said, I told the lady who assessed me, and she was like, no, it doesn't fit with what we've got. So, no.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Okay, here we are at the end of March 2021, and welcome to another edition of Mental Health Monday with me, Mick Coyle. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and once again, an important conversation to have. Episode 198, can you believe? This week. I'm making sure, I'm trying my best to make sure that we've got something for episode 200. We're just about to head into that slightly odd period of time now with a bank holiday weekend, so we'll be missing an episode coming up. I've got a week off, by the way, for that. So you may see a little tiny hole in your podcast feed. Apologies for that. But we'll be making sure that episode 200 does represent the very best of what we've been able to achieve through Mental Health Monday. Thanks to everybody getting involved in the conversation. Thanks for everyone getting involved in the Facebook group that we've set up as well. And for the people who are hashtagging Mental Health Monday on social media. Got a great guest for you on the way. Beth Rees is our guest. I'll tell you a little bit more about her in just a few moments' time, because her story is a really interesting one. But Beth was really pleased to see the conversation that we had last week with Dean Russell MP really came to life in the House of Commons. So at the moment, the bill is going through Parliament, which will see mental health first aid available in all workplaces and colleges. Now, there's sort of parliamentary process involved in all of this, but we're on the right track to make that a reality and to make that happen, which is really, really good news. It was good to get Dean Russell on the programme on last week's show, which we had to split into two parts, and we did them on two separate days. But I think as long as you've got them in the feed, you'll get a full heads up as to what the conversation is all about. With that in mind, let's hear from Beth. Beth writes a blog called Just a Square Peg, justasquarepeg.com for that one. I'm talking about being in a... Well, sort of in between a couple of potential diagnoses. One that she has currently for borderline personality disorder, but also potentially as well autism, and how sitting between the two leaves her in her own particular situation. She talks through the situation around that, and it's a fascinating insight, actually, in terms of diagnosis and labels that people either like or don't like to have put upon them. So it's a really interesting story, and we'll come on to that in a few moments' time. First up, though, Beth was keen to support the work of Dean Russell MP and believes that, yeah, absolutely, it can make a huge difference to people's lives if mental health first aid is much more widely available.
Oh, it's going to be massive. And I think, firstly, a big thank you to Dean on behalf of anybody who's ever had kind of struggles at work with their mental health. I think it's a really big step forward. I recorded it and watched it on the day that he did it. And I sat with my partner and I felt really emotional about it. Because like I said, I've sort of experienced kind of mental health stigma at work, in the past, at the start of my career. And it's such a big deal to be able to think that 10 years ago, there wasn't anyone you could go to if you were struggling. You kind of had to make up that you had a cough or a cold in order just to kind of get that day where, you feel really down. So actually having someone to go to in the workplace to say, I don't feel okay, and for someone to signpost you to the right kind of services and help is just amazing. It's so important.
I kind of get a sense as well that it will make a huge difference to businesses. Those businesses who maybe weren't, malicious in their treatment of staff, but just had a complete lack of understanding, they'll benefit hugely from
this. They will.
This.
And you know what, actually, I don't think when I was experiencing that stigma that it was malicious. I like you say, I think it was because they just didn't understand it. I don't think it was as talked about then as it is now. And I think, they've sort of probably been learning for the last, 10 years up until this point. So, I think it's great. And as a Times Change champion, it's lovely to go into workplaces and the employers are really keen to sign that pledge and say, yes, we will, treat people fairly. We will give them the time to tell us what's wrong, and we'll try to help them as well and kind of facilitate and help them with any needs they've got. So I think it's brilliant.
That sort of lack of understanding, lack of education, lack of knowledge, In what sort of ways does that manifest itself, do you think, within workplaces? What are the mistakes, if you like, that workplaces are making?
I think sometimes, because there's such a wide range of mental health conditions for a start, that sometimes, you know, people don't understand what, you know, what people do in those sorts of things. So if you're depressed, you know, people will think you're down, but some days you could have a really good day, but then have a really bad day. It's kind of, you know, and it's also really personal. So I know a lot of people now who kind of say to me, what do you think? Do you think I should tell my employer? And it's really tricky for me to kind of recommend if they do or they don't, because you don't know what, you know, kind of organization they work for or what the people are like. So I just, you know, it's kind of like gauging it. But I think, you know, employers now, you know, I've tried to bring about the Time to Change pledge in a couple of places that I've worked, just, you know, so that they are recognised as places that can help. But I think as well, you know, like for me, with, you know, I've got borderline personality disorder, and that's not particularly well known about, I guess, in workplaces. And I blogged for Mind about it and how, you know, what it's like being in a workplace with BPD. And bless my employers, tried, you know, throughout the years, I've tried really hard to understand it. And sometimes I don't even understand it. So, you know, I think doing, you know, mental health first aid, I think when I did it, you know, they tell you about anxiety, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, things that actually you might come across. And, you know, people I was doing the course with were like, I did not even know that. I didn't know that was a side effect, you know. So, yeah, I think they're learning as they go. And I think it's really, I think it's really good. I think they're becoming a lot more open-minded as well, I think.
But actually, from the example you've given there, classic example as to why this law change is needed, that actually people come to you as a mental health champion, if you like, and say, should I tell my boss? And your answer is still, I don't know. Whereas yes, actually, if they said, I've fallen over and my finger's fallen off, yeah, should I tell my boss? You would say, of course, because you would know there are processes in place, there's a strategy, and there is almost like a duty upon your boss to help and sort out. And that's the disparity, isn't it? That's absolutely clear from what you've said there.
And, you know, it's really funny, because I really want to say to people, you should be able to tell them, and they should, you know, be quite accepting and say, okay, what can we do to help? Shall we work on like a plan to going forward? And like, you know, for example, where I work at the moment, my boss has been absolutely amazing. The organization have been amazing. She's kind of, we've gone through a well-being plan. She's always checking to see if I'm okay. Like it's amazing. And I'm really lucky. And I kind of hope that for other people as well, that they, you know, will be able to hopefully in the future, you know, have someone designated there that is not only first aid trained in case, you know, you need CPR and medical attention, but actually if you're going through a really tough time and you don't know what to do.
Absolutely. And I think as well, if you are a boss, I think not taking steps almost represents a failing in your part as a boss. Because if you think about not just the way things have been, but the way things will move forward in terms of working from home, working in an office, particularly women coming back from maternity leave and having sort of flexible hours and hour changes there, people who might be having ongoing physical treatment that they need to take certain time away from the office for. And often organizations now take steps to help out in regard to all of those things. And actually to do that from a mental health point of view, not just creates or takes away some of the issues that the employee might be having, but also I think that there's a strong argument there that your staff retainment levels will be higher, because you think, my boss is great, they understand me, they understand how my life works, this is a place I'm going to stay. And also I think productivity becomes higher, because you don't have those flashpoint moments where suddenly nothing can happen. And I think that's almost the argument that needs to be made to industry to kind of say, look, productivity levels in the UK are different to levels across Europe. Here's one possibility that simply improves it, I think, almost at a stroke, that would make a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, as like you said, I mean, it was interesting to hear what Dean was saying last week about, you know, the amount of people that have had, you know, sick days and actually have been able to say, you know, I'm not in a very good place mentally, I feel really anxious, I'm feeling really down, you know. And I think, you know, that's sort of a great thing. And I think working from home has been really good in a way, because I think it's given more people kind of a better work-life balance. But for someone like me who doesn't know when to stop, like I found it really difficult. But again, my boss is so good, because I work sort of up until a certain point in the day, she texts me and it's like, have you finished? You should finish now, stop working, you know. So, you know, even small things like that, I just think, oh, she gets me, she understands it, and it's really like a big relief. And I think, like I said, if other people can have that as well, I think, you know, it's a lot better. And especially now, you know, being a mental health first aider, even if you've got to do it virtually for the time being, I think is really important. I think people are going to struggle with, you know, anxiety coming out of lockdown, having to go back on a busy train to work, having to, you know, go into the workplace. So, yeah, I think this, it's really funny, actually, like, you know, when sort of first proposed it, it was important. And now it's more important than ever.
Absolutely. I don't know if, and we're going on slightly off topic here now. I kind of wonder whether or not at the moment, this sort of like, I get a sense that life after lockdown is to anybody their ideal life. Like, I think we all have these images in our mind about what our version of life after lockdown will look like. And for some people, it's the barbecues. For some people, it's back to the office.
Yeah.
For some people, it's meeting friends and it's going down the pub. But I think that my fear is that the realities of life after lockdown won't be, and people will very quickly start to go, oh, I'm here again. I'm back on the commute that I didn't enjoy. I'm back in the office with the people I didn't like working with. And my real fear is that will have a massive impact, because there's a temptation to believe that after lockdown, we enter some sort of like perfect world where coronavirus doesn't exist, but coronavirus will still clearly exist. And all of those issues, like the world was far from perfect before coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I have a real fear that the reality of that striking for a lot of people will be quite hard to deal with, probably for myself included, where you suddenly go, oh, right, this is real life now. Because we've almost sort of like, it's hard to sometimes remember what life was like before, because we've had now a year of, you know, slight adjustments. But some people have been almost like in complete lockdown within their towns for the entirety of the year, with these sort of brief moments in between. But that's a long way to almost retrain your brain and get into a different place, I think.
Definitely. And actually, when you were saying about towns, so we're in Caerphilly, and Caerphilly were the first place in Wales going to lockdown in September. And we had like about a week, I think, where, you know, my birthday week, where we went for a meal in a very kind of safe environment. And then the day after, it was like, boom, back into lockdown again. It was like, oh, right, okay. So I think it is. I think it's really I think it's a bit like nerving for people. And I really admire, and I love his work, Matt Haig, you know, mental health campaigner and author. And he had said something about, you know, we're all looking forward to this normal. But actually, normal was, we were too stressed, we were too busy, we were anxious, we didn't have enough time for ourselves, we didn't look after ourselves. You know, we were always on the go. And this has meant now that actually a lot of people have just kind of stopped. And I felt that really resonate, because I, like, always on the go, always doing things. And actually now it's kind of like, I need to take a step back and think about whether I'm doing it for me, or I'm just doing it because I'm a yes person. And I like to, you know, and I like to sort of please other people. So I think it's really important. But what he said is absolutely kind of spot on. And what you were saying, it's, life wasn't perfect before. And actually, I don't know whether, you know, lockdown has actually may have helped a couple of people, you know, with their mental health and actually self-care, and think, well, I don't want to go and do that today. Or actually, I'm going to walk to work instead, so I don't have to be around people, but I'll get that exercise and look after myself. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of changes to come.
At the moment, we've got this vision of the perfect end of lockdown, and it's going to work for everybody in a way which is perfect for everybody. And I think we'll probably find out pretty sharpish that that's not going to be the case. But whether or not that means that, you know, we all run headlong out of lockdown with our arms waving in the air, saying, hooray, here we go, life begins afresh. That might be one way forward. Another way forward might be to let a few days pass, to assess yourself and think, right, how am I going to move forward? What's going to be right for me, not just for the next 6 months, but for the next 2 or 3 years?
Definitely. And it's funny, actually, because obviously now in Wales we're open, it was starting to kind of lift a couple of restrictions, and, you know, like in the supermarket we can buy things now that were non-essential before, and we thought the supermarket was going to be really, really busy. And when we went, we were like, wow, there's nobody about. And it's funny, like you said, everyone's going to think there's going to be a massive rush, you know, wow, we're done, we're out. But actually, even, you know, little thing like, you know, lifting the non-essential items in shops, you know, we thought there was going to be a massive rush and there hasn't been. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens and how people kind of react, I guess.
See, if that had been England, we'd all been about buying washing machines and microwaves and things like that, just piling three or four into a trolley, just get it through the till as quickly as possible.
Go.
Now, Beth, let's just talk about your blog, Just a Square Peg, which is a great phrase. But it talks of and speaks of this sort of, and people often talk about labels and diagnosis, but it speaks of like life in an in-between world. You mentioned borderline personality sort of there, but you mentioned autism as well. Just frame for us sort of where you're at in terms of yourself, in terms of that sort of in-between spot, if you like.
I think you're right, actually. I feel very much like a square peg right now. Because I was diagnosed in 2017 with borderline personality disorder, or BPD, and I kind of felt really relieved, like, wow, this explains so much about me growing up and the fact that I struggled quite a lot. Wow, this is great. And then a counsellor and my GP was sort of like, we're starting to think that maybe this isn't quite right for you. And when I started reading about it, I was like, oh, I don't know, really. And then my counsellor, actually, she's autistic, so she said, I really, really think that you need to be assessed. And in 2017, I got assessed, and it came back. The lady said, you know, your mum says you were fine as a kid. You don't have really very, you know, intense interests, and you don't seem to me like you're autistic. And I was so crushed, because I think lots of, you know, medical professionals have said, yeah, no, we think that's it. So I just sort of put it to the side and thought, you know what, it's obviously BPD. I need to start learning about myself. And so I started doing that. And then in last year, I had an appointment in November with the psychiatrist, and she said, I've got a horrible feeling that you are not, you haven't got BPD. And in fact, I think you might be autistic. How do you feel about that? And I said, well, it's been mentioned before, but someone said I didn't look it and I didn't act it. So, you know, and then she said, in this phone call, I have spotted several things, and I really think that you need to pursue it again. And she said, you know, thank you for being so persistent. I know our services are very stretched. I'm really sorry that you haven't had the support, but I really, really think that you should do this, because I think you're going to find peace of mind in it. So I filled out what ended up being 24 page referral form for our local autism service. And I've been accepted onto the waiting list. So I'm currently waiting, but I think it's December. But like you said, I'm in limbo at the moment. I don't really know. It's really strange. A lot of people say labels don't matter, diagnosis doesn't matter, but there is a sense of identity in that, and I feel a little bit lost at the moment. So I'm trying to sort of talk about it in case there are other people, and I've had a couple of women message me and say, oh my gosh, this happened to me. They said, somebody said I had bipolar, and when I sort of when it all turns out, I'm actually autistic. And it's really funny, you go from you have this thing that is altering your life to you actually are this, and it's just that your brain works differently, and they're two very different things. So yeah, I'm in a bit of a limbo, but I'm trying to sort of share that with other people and hope that, you know, if there are women out there who think they might be autistic, that maybe they pursue it and see if they can find out a bit more.
So this is a topic that a colleague of mine has been working on recently, because it's an issue, particularly the diagnosis of autism within girls and women is significantly lower within boys, but because there seems to be such a prevalence of boys, it appears, and this might not be factually correct, but it appears that we've essentially defined autism by how boys display their autism. So the things that you would associate with boys and autism are often seen as the tick box things that you then assess a girl for, but they might actually be very different for females. It's almost as if there's a sense we almost need to sort of redefine our understanding of autism, or almost have almost like a gender specific definition of autism, which again would be a huge step forward in terms of understanding as well. I think it's interesting as well, that idea of that labels, that, you know, you don't then get, you know, a t-shirt that then just says I'm autistic, or it used to be borderline personality, on it now it's something else. You know, that wouldn't be something that I don't think that most people do. But actually, when you when you mentioned about borderline personality disorder and that diagnosis, you were then able to go away, read up on it, find out some more information, and things started to resonate with you, which just goes to show it's about relatability and almost like a self signposting tool for you to be able to kind of go, all right, oh, that makes sense to me now, or that makes sense of something that happened 10 or 15 years ago that I've never really been able to explain, but now I understand it.
Yes, and I think that's what I felt with BPD, I think, to start with, that, oh wow, like, okay, this explains a bit, you know. But then, like, when, you know, the psychiatrist, my GP and the counsellor mentioned, you know, actually 95% that you're autistic. And when I spoke to the autism service, the guy said, you've been assessed yet? And I was like, no. And he went, I'd be surprised if you're not, but I can't, you know, I can't diagnose. So I've been able to speak to them. But actually, I bought all the books that there are about, you know, written by women who have autism. I have, you know, read a lot of them, and it's really comforting to read about people who are just these amazing, strong women who are autistic and have managed to do all these amazing things and have pinpointed, well, here are some things. For example, you know, jobs, apparently. So I've had quite a few jobs, and I always thought it was just because, like, I just didn't fit in, and that I just kind of thought, oh, I haven't really found where I'm going to thrive or that I'm good. But actually, it's a thing within, you know, being autistic, is that you have kind of almost like meltdown, then shutdown. And that happens at work. And then you leave because you just get so overwhelmed. And I just always thought it was a failing in me, you know, like I'm not mentally strong enough to be in a busy workplace. But actually, like reading about it now and actually being able to talk to my boss, my, you know, my manager about it, she's like, I've been reading about it. I want to be able to help you. And it's absolutely incredible. So yeah, it's a funny one, because I think it's for every 3 males that are diagnosed, 1 woman or 1 female. And you're right, it's very, you know, kind of leaning towards, you know, boys. And there definitely needs to be a change in the way that, you know, it's looked at and, you know, sort of interest. Because I sort of said to my counsellor, you know, I think, you know, I said, well, you know me, I've got a massive thing, a bit of an obsession about, you know, the programme Sex and the City. And I've watched it about 8 times. I've read all the books. I've seen the films. I did my dissertation at uni on it. And she's like, yeah, that is a special interest. Like, whatever anyone says, that is your, like, thing. And I said, you know, I told the, you know, the lady who assessed me, and she was like, no, it doesn't fit with what we've got. So, you know, no. So it is, you know, like you said, they're definitely, you know, it's moving in the right direction, I think. But yes. I'm a little bit scared.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, knowledge, you know, knowledge brings with it, you know, power and a sort of sense of self as well. Could it be, and I'm just a hypothesis, because of my understanding here, obviously borderline personality disorder would be, people would talk about a mental health issue there, whereas autism is sort of neurodevelopmental, isn't it, which is slightly different. But I can't imagine you'd reach a point where you go, sorry BPD, what, it's not you, I'm not doing any more mental health work, because actually,
like,
now I'm now in this neurodevelopmental world. That's where the angle I'm going in. I kind of get a sense that you've placed the two together, because that's sort of formed your journey so far.
Definitely, that's the thing. I don't think I can, like, almost turn my back on that, because that is almost like what I've identified with, and, you know, for the last couple of years. So I mean, it's entirely possible, you know, they've kind of said, you know, we think it's a misdiagnosis of BPD, but actually it could be comorbid with something else, so I could have both. But at the moment, it's that in between, I think, where I'm not entirely sure. And I, you know, last time I was kind of like, I, you know, when I went for my private assessment, you know, I was like, oh, maybe this will, you know, everyone keep, you know, all these people that in kind of good, you know, medical positions are telling me. And then this lady still said, no, you don't fit the criteria, and that's that. So I'm a little bit scared that that's going to happen again. But the autism service in our area have been amazing. And they're just like, you know, if you ever want to ring us and do a Zoom and, you know, talk to us about your worries, you can, because you're on the list, you know, we want to help you. So yeah, it's looking promising, but we'll see.
It's great. And it's great that you've had that sort of response, particularly from, you know, your local services. Mm-hmm. Because I guess no matter what the label or no matter what the diagnosis, still you, isn't it? Still you and the way that you see the world. And I guess that doesn't change as a result of the diagnosis.
Yeah. And it's funny, actually, I get a lot of people always say, you're too nice. And they've always said it in a really negative way. You know, like, you know, in sort of jobs at the start of my career, you're far too nice. And I sort of go, oh, okay. And now, you know, my other half says, you're too nice. But it, like you said, in a good way. And I think it's that. It's things that people have pointed out during my life that have been like, that's bad, don't do that. You know, so sometimes when I'm kind of deep in thought, I bite the inside of my lip, my cheek. And, you know, people have been like, what are you doing? That's really weird. Like, stop doing that. So, but actually, it's called stimming. It's self-soothing. In it, like, you know, if you're autistic, that's what you do. And my counsellor said, you know, the first time I saw you, I knew because you, she said, you sat there and you didn't give me eye contact and tune on the side of your face, you know, all these sort of indicators. So it's being able to do those things and not feel ashamed of it, I think.
And I guess as well, when we bring it back around to sort of knowledge within a workplace environment, but it doesn't have to just be a workplace environment. It can be, you know, a million and one different environments, a home environment as much as anything. I guess, you know, this is why the education is so important, that we almost need to understand, so that if you raise any of the issues that we've just been talking about now, that at least there might be a sense that you might hear, even if they're not full understanding, a sense of maybe empathy. Yeah. That might come back, or like, oh, I think I heard about this, or I remember reading about this, or oh, is this the thing where X, Y, or Z? Would at least give you a sense that other people had a sense of knowledge about some of those things, and that would be a really nice place to be. It kind of feels like we're a bit of a way away from that at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, at the moment, like my job, I am so lucky. I have such an amazing team of people who really understand and are learning, like, you know, on my behalf, they're learning, you know. And I sort of said, like, for example, I've always had trouble with a lot of processes. Like, I can't seem to understand if something's written in a certain way, it just doesn't go in. And now, you know, my manager's saying to me, okay, well, tell you what, we'll talk about it on the phone first, and then I'll email you, and then you email me back and just like give me an idea of what you think, you know, and then I'll confirm, you know. So it's really good. I get to double check that my thought process is okay and that it's right. And she's so good. She's got the time. She's just like, you know, I don't want you to struggle by yourself. It's hard, everyone working from home, that, you know, I can't see you, but I want you to ring me or text me or whatever, and I can explain it to you. So like, I'm really lucky, but I mean, there are obviously, you know, there's still a lot of work to go, you know, and probably in other kind of organizations or workplaces. But like we were saying, you know, with this bill, I think it's going in the right direction, and I think it's a really positive thing.
Absolutely. I noticed the dog now in the background is
starting to in the garden. I've locked her out. She's now
saying it's time to let her in. Well, it's okay, because we're reaching the end of the conversation, Beth. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll just mention, actually, a bit of Time to Change champion. We just got to mention, by the way, that Time to Change as we know it won't be around an organization 15 years or so, which has done incredible work, hasn't it?
It has. But you know what, I'm a Time to Change Wales champion, and Time to Change Wales have just secured 12 more months of funding, so I am still a volunteer for Time to Change Wales, which is amazing. I think they announced it yesterday, so it's really sad about Time to Change in England, because there are so many people who have done amazing work there, and it is such a shame. Because I know, like, you know, volunteering with Time to Change Wales for the last 4 years, you know, they're incredible, and what they do is actually making a lot of kind of progress in workplaces. So it's really sad for England, but it's a really good thing for Wales that we're still, at the moment, we're still going. So
yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned to actually Jo Loughran, who's the chief exec, when she was on the program, fingers crossed that the expertise and the knowledge that's within these organizations, whether they're here for another year or whether they disappear, moves into another field, so at least that knowledge is not lost. Because, you know, as champions, it's become this huge movement, and long may it continue, particularly in Wales, if it's can be secured for beyond the next 12 months. So that's brilliant news as well. Justasquarepeg.com, is that the website where people can go?
That's me, yeah.
People can find out more information there. Beth Rees, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us for Mental Health Monday.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm just really pleased to have been on. And well done again to Dean Russell for making those inroads and making a big, big impact.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999.